Good morning, friends, and welcome. Good morning. Try that again. I want to say a special welcome this morning to Bruce, all alone up in the balcony. Somebody go join Bruce up there. It looks lonely. I think Anne's probably on her way. Welcome to you. My name's Doug. With me in leadership here in the congregation this morning are Dr. Sarah Svensson and Cadence, organ scholar, and a number of members of the congregation. Thank you. And, of course, our choir and singers. So, welcome to all of you. Flowers today are presented in loving memory by the McKelvey family, and there's a beautiful list starting with Michelle McKelvey and her grandmother, grandfather, and great-grandmother. And I'll say a little bit more about the McKelvey family that's gathered here with us today. But thank you for the beautiful flowers, and we join you in these remembrances. So a couple of event announcements. As you may have seen, if you follow the weekly email or if you got the notice, the drag bingo lunch has been canceled or postponed. It was to be after service today. But the good news is there's another lunch already scheduled for next week. So we hope you'll join in what used to be the annual picnic and has become an annual congregational lunch. It'll be held downstairs. Please do RSVP either by the link that's in the weekly email or directly to the office. It's helpful to know how many people will come, but always a great opportunity to celebrate the congregation, the season's work before you really come into wind down season. My spidey sense tells me Sarah is somewhere behind me, so I'm going to ask her, there she is, to speak to you about Rosedale Center.
First, just a special thank you to Georgia Kelly Chong for her amazing music this morning. You'll hear her again at the postlude. Georgia is preparing for her Royal Conservatory exam, and she's part of our ARIA Youth Music Program. And having heard her play during that time on Monday nights, I was like, why aren't you playing in church? So now she's playing in church. Welcome and well done. As a team, we just want to say a little thank you to everyone. On Friday night, we had the honor of hosting another great event with Hughes Room Live, and we just so happen to have the president of Hughes Room Live in our choir, Jim Thomas, and then Susan Vance, our interim executive director, has also been an amazing force to be reckoned with to make all of this happen. So do you just want to say a few words, Susan?
Sure. Thank you, Sarah. Do you know the last time this church had almost no seats left? Do you know when that was?
Gordon Lightfoot.
It was Friday night. We were packed full. The musicians stood on the stage and looked at beautiful, happy, smiling people bopping away in their seats to the music that they grew up with. And it was an awesome vibe, and it was amazing, and we're going to do it again. And Jim can tell you something about that.
So thank you, Susan. It was a thrill. It was a thrill for the people that came. It was a thrill for the people who performed. Toronto has some of the most incredible musicians ever, and Toronto has some of the most incredible songs, and we rocked it out with them on Friday night. So those of you who came, I want to thank you. It's a wonderful partnership that Hughes Room Live has with the Rosedale Center, and we're planning some shows this fall. We are going to do another Lightfoot tribute in October. We have plans for a Stan Rogers tribute coming up. So there's lots going on, and we are thrilled to be doing this partnership with Rosedale.
Thank you so much. I was able to be here and I was in the balcony, and it's my last Sunday here. I can be a little irreligious for a moment. I was sitting in the balcony, and the room was beautiful. The evening light, the light coming through the Orbis Terrarum, the Jesus window, Jesus hovering over the earth. And I'm sure at one point I saw his head start to move and his hands start going, and the place just felt fully and beautifully alive. So thank you for bringing that to us. Congregational lunch, my last Sunday. It's been wonderful to be here. Thank you for that. I'll be back periodically, however I can support Kristen, starting next Sunday, Reverend Dr. Ann Simmons, who has joined Bruce in the balcony, so he's not alone. And Ann will be on for the next five Sundays, followed by Reverend Dan Benson. And as always, we can be accessed for pastoral care through the office, or if you have our direct information, do that. But you will have your needs covered while Kristen remains away. Rosedale United Church is a congregation committed to supporting human flourishing here in the heart of Rosedale and in our city. We gather to learn, to grow, and to serve. In this land, the traditional territory of the Huron-Wendat, the Petun First Nations, the Seneca, and most recently the Mississaugas of the Credit River, we are bound together with Indigenous neighbors and their faiths. We are grateful to gather on this territory. May we learn to live out our commitments to truth and reconciliation and cast a better and finer future for all. Would you join me, please, in the call to worship? It's responsive and it's printed in your order of service. We gather again in this beloved place, as so many times before, to become once again what we have always been, whole and holy, many becoming a family in God. Gathered again, may we be surprised by joy and released from fears, summoned again to be yours. And we sing as we gather, joyful, joyful. Could we stand together? joyful indeed. We are formed again as the church, not by an idea or a knowledge, but by being together and turning to one. Please remain standing. I should have pointed out that's what that little asterisk on the left means. And could we turn to one another briefly and reverently, offering one another the sign of the peace of Christ? Could I invite you now to a time for silence, drawing ourselves into the depth and the beauty of this place, and then after a simple gathering prayer to join me in the Lord's Prayer. So we come to this, your place again, remembering to breathe deeply again, remembering again that we breathe you in and we participate in all of your being as we gather together. So for this congregation, we bring grateful hearts. And for this place, which we and our ancestors have loved and built and kept. For congregations we have been part of, which have come and gone or which live on still, for those places and for those people, we are grateful, believing that you are indeed, Lord, risen and alive and among us when we are together in peace, and with gratitude and with longing together for your ways. And so with the words of your Jesus who gathers us, we offer this prayer. O loving parent, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Now, just before Susan McKelvey comes forward to read the first lesson, I'd like to say a little bit about, first of all, a welcome to the extended McKelvey family that has gathered here, and to point out that the window that you see on the front of your order of service is there because you can't see it, because it's tucked around the corner here. But it's a window that honors John Kent, an ancestor of the McKelvey family. And as the family has gathered for a celebration together this week, we took the time to honor and give thanks for the window that you have recovered from, first of all, if I have this right, Old St. Andrew's Church, and then St. Andrew's United Church, eventually to make its way here, an image of the legend of St. Christopher, and it was placed here in 2002. So, representing the McKelvey family, would Susan please come forward to lead us into the scriptures for this morning?
Book of Ruth, chapter 1, selected verses. We will hear the close of a longer story. Naomi is from Judah. She moved away. her sons married foreign women, but now all three husbands have died, and Naomi is going to return to Judah. Should they each go to their own country or stay together? Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you, as they have dealt with the dead and with me." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud. So she said to Ruth, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not press me to leave you, to turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do thus to me and more as well, even if death parts me from you." This is the witness of the Hebrew Bible.
Thank you, Susan. So we'll take a moment in silence to consider the theme for the day, which rises out of this passage. When I was a young boy, I had an Aunt Ruth. Aunt Ruth lived across the road and was just one of those people who was always there. And I learned at some point in my younger years that she wasn't actually an aunt, she was a neighbor. And it was just that custom of when there are people who are close to you who aren't actually part of your family, you call them Aunt so-and-so. Or do any of you have someone like that in your past or your present? Or maybe you are an aunt, an honorary aunt or uncle in that way. That's the first part of the story to reflect on. And the second is that the anthem that we're going to hear in just a few moments is from the musical Rent. And the same theme follows out of the musical Rent. It follows the story of a group of unrelated young men and women who, through the vicissitudes of their very messed up lives, essentially become a family unit. So, to open the theme, this question for you. I wrote it down and I need my glasses. Have you had sort of family in your circle? Who are they? Be grateful for them this morning. We'll pause for a few moments.
words that she learned, or in times that he cried, in bridges he burned, or the way that she died.
Thank you, Sarah and singers, for that. It could be that your weekly practice permits you lots of time for reflection and prayer. It could be that it's only in this gathering here that we take the time to settle in, to consider what gratitudes we bring and what longings we bring, and so may I invite you into a time for prayer now. And we have a sung response. It's printed here, "Take, oh, take me as I am." We'll sing it through once just now, and then I'll invite you to prayer. For this conviction, Creator, that you do live in us, that you are risen not once but every day in our breathing, in our thinking, in our learning, and in our loving. And so for the ways that you live in us and between us, we come conscious of this and grateful. This day, take, oh, take me as I am. As your Spirit moves in us and clears our sight so that we might see the world around us and the people around us more clearly, may we be aware of how much ground we have yet to cover and what you do call us toward. And so for our longings, within our families for longings for reconciliations, for recovery from grieving, within the world community for our longings to understand the way toward a lasting peace. Would your Spirit move in us and pull us toward your ways each day? Take me as I am. And for your church, vessel of so much goodness, source sometimes of trouble, but always bearing your name, always bearing your son across the river, may your church always be for this people and all who would come here a place of rest if we are weary, and a place to dream if we are lost. Take me as I am. So, amen. Our response to this prayer is our offerings, which, as you may know, consist of both the giving of our gifts. The plate will not be passed. If you're a guest here today, please know that you are our guest and no offering is expected. There are envelopes and a box at the back if you'd like to contribute to our shared work. But we will also take a few moments, and there's an action if you would like to follow through with a specific response. Let me say today, if there's someone for whom you are grateful who has been family or like family for you, feel free to move forward or to one of the candle units on the side and to take this step to be grateful for them. Would you join me in the spoken response? We offer the work of our hands and the love of our hearts, the gifts of God as a blessing for the world. a blessing on all these gestures. And I should have noted that I know we often run out of candles, but when you join light to a flame that's already there, that's a beautiful thing as well. Thank you for these gestures. Continuing with the teaching of the scriptures, I'd like to invite, regretting that Janet is not available to be here, Janet's husband Bruce to come forward.
Mark 3, selected verses. In this passage, we hear the record of Jesus becoming prominent for his teaching and healing. And his family, not understanding his work, try to restrain him. He redefines who his family is. Then he went home, and the crowd came together again so that they could not even eat. When his family heard it, they went out to restrain him, for people were saying, "He has gone out of his mind." His mother and his brothers came, and standing outside, they sent to him and called him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they said to him, "Your mother and your brothers are outside asking for you." And he replied, "Who are my mother and my brothers?" And looking at those who sat around him, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and sister and mother." This is the witness of the early church.
Thank you, Bruce. We'll sing together, and please note that this hymn now is from More Voices, and the closing hymn, which will be unannounced, says it's from More Voices, but it's not. Just a little trick. So we'll sing this hymn from More Voices. The closing hymn is in the red hymn book. Deep in our hearts is a common vision. Jean Vanier wrote this. I know Jean Vanier, we now understand, to have had some disordered aspects to his character, but also a man of great dignity and beauty in other ways. He wrote, "I cannot be a universal brother unless I first love my people. I cannot be a universal brother unless I first love my people." If we can figure out family, we may have a chance at figuring out humanity. The biblical stories, of course, can become far more complicated, but I think it reduces to at least this. If we can sort out how to be family with each other, to each other, we will be well on our way to sorting out how we can be a people of God in the world. I see that equation. One of our ways of expressing this conviction is that God has a dream for how it will be among us, for the shape of our world and the character of our relationships. This dream is carried in many vessels, and family is one of them. So the scriptures give us some family stories, like Ruth and Naomi, Sarah and Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, Mary and Elizabeth. The story of Ruth, which we heard, is a curious inclusion in the Hebrew Bible. It's not really about God. It doesn't talk much about God or God's ways or spirituality or divine guidance. It's just a story about a family uprooted by famine, torn by death, then ethnically separated, and then finding another chance, which makes it, of course, a profoundly human story. And it confirms that the message of the Hebrews, the Hebrew writers, is not so much about beliefs and rituals as it is simply about human beings finding our way through a beautiful, difficult world in the most careful and whole way that we can, and watching for God's presence as we do this. The message seems to be this: if we can figure out how to be family, we can figure out how to be the redeeming, life-giving, and life-given people of God in the world. A few things that have come up this week prompt this conversation about family. First of them being the plan of the McKelvey family, and also honoring the ancestral Kent family to gather with us and hence to look at the St. Christopher. I didn't know a lot about the St. Christopher legend. Of course, the St. Christopher medal is the traditional token worn by travelers, so he was seen as the patron saint of travelers, but apparently he is also the patron saint of athletic bachelors. Now, I don't know how these things work and who gets to make those judgments, but if you know any athletic bachelors, you can point out to them that this is their guy right here. He is also apparently patron saint of those suffering from toothache. So do with that what you will, there it is. So this window has made its way through four generations of the Kent and McKelvey family, and they are here to celebrate a number of their beloved people with us today. So there's the first thing. Second is, it's Pride Month. It's the beginning of Pride Month. And while this covers many, many variations of the human condition and human choices, it also reminds us of the complexities of family life for people living in the LGBTQ plus world over the past several generations, and how it was not always easy to be family, to be in family of origin, or to become new family for folks in that community. And so that is an aspect of this week, the complexities of being family and understanding different choices and different realities people come to understand. There's a second thing. Here's another one. I was talking with Julia Kelly. Julia Kelly, you might know, is for, on behalf of the congregation, carrying the refugee work of the congregation, which has at different times been extensive and pronounced, and it ebbs and flows. But we were talking about a number of families Julia is working with who are reuniting families from Afghanistan trying to come here, and she commented on how hard those folks work, barely established here in this country, and how they are able to summon the resources to have their family come and join them. And her comment was, family is family. They dig because family is family. And the last of the things, the constellation of things that came together this week, was a conversation with John Freising, who's here today. And John communicated with me a couple of weeks ago to remind me that this Thursday, you will have seen this if you read the weekly email, this Thursday is the 80th anniversary of the event known as the D-Day, the landings on the Normandy beaches, with many Canadian families represented, including John's uncle, Gordon. And so John asked that we might pause on Thursday to remember the families impacted, both by delight as their young men came home and by grief as their young men failed to come home, and that those who were involved in that struggle made possible so many of the freedoms that allow us the peace to reimagine who we might be with in our families. So there's a lot of background. Conventional wisdom tells us that Christian faith should be very big on family. Sometimes that's interpreted a little narrowly as family values, but I won't go there. So we should look at Jesus and his mother first. And we could look at the part, this is big in Luke, and we read this around Christmas time. We could look at the part where she reflects on his birth and the powerful things God is bringing about through her as a pregnant woman and the coming birth of her son. You can see the early chapters of Luke's gospel for that. Or we could reflect on the grief she knew as she watched closely and from a distance as he went to his death at the hands of the powerful who could not understand him. But there's another part to that relationship, their relationship, and it may be a part of being family that we can identify with. It was the time she thought he was crazy, and she sent his brothers to go and take him away so he wouldn't get into trouble. And he told them to go away, that he didn't need them. This is a very instructive story. It appears three times in the scriptures. The first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, each tell this story. If you know a little bit about basic Bible study, it's that often stories were borrowed from the original Gospel writer. That they appear in all three Gospels is of note. But here's something that scholars really take note of. It's an embarrassing story. So they apply what they call the criterion of embarrassment. If the gospel writers told a story that made Jesus and his group and his family look kind of weird, who wants to tell a story about the time their mother thought they were crazy and their brothers came to rescue them? So the fact that the story is there speaks very strongly to it being an authentic story, the criterion of embarrassment. It goes like this. There was a crowd. Jesus had been doing some compelling things, teaching and healing. Someone called out, "Jesus, your mother and brothers are outside. They want to speak with you," as in, they want to speak with you. Something's not right. Jesus pointed to his disciples and said, "Wait a minute, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and mother and sister." They thought he had gone out of his mind. His mother figures he's a few shingles shy of a whole roof. When his family heard about this, they went out to restrain him. Any of this ring a bell? I'm no sociologist, but I have some experiences of family, mine and many others, and there are some patterns here. Parents sometimes think their children are crazy. Anyone? You don't need to don't put your hand up, especially if you're here with your kids or your parents. They think we're dating or marrying the wrong person. They think we're choosing the wrong career. They think we're listening to weird music, which we were. They're hanging with the wrong crowd. They're making poor choices, believing weird things about God. Parents sometimes think their children are crazy. In the musical Rent, from which the choir sang that piece so beautifully today, one of the characters, they're a group of, as I said, somewhat dysfunctional people living, some of them with HIV/AIDS, some of them in poverty, in a squatter's hovel. And one of them says, Sometimes I wonder, why are we here? Why do we choose to be freezing? Why do we choose to be starving? Why do we choose to be at peril? He says this as a rhetorical question to his housemates. And then he says, but then they call his parents. Then they call, and I remember why. Parents sometimes think their children are crazy, and children sometimes evict their parents, decide they do not need them. Prodigal sons tell their parents where to put it, and they head out to a far-off land where they waste their inheritance. We decide that our own experiences are so different from our parents that they have nothing to teach us, no wisdom to give, and so we set them aside. And people sometimes choose new families. Alcoholics Anonymous, neighbors who care, congregations, high school groups become our family if there is a vacuum to fill, because we are always a vacuum hungry for love. The scriptures instruct us to honor our mothers and fathers, but many have found that you cannot honor one who has abused or abandoned or manipulated you. And the only way to live whole and healed is to find or to make a new family. And so we do this. Parents sometimes think their children are crazy. Children sometimes evict their families. And sometimes we choose entirely new families. But there are two pieces of good news in this constellation of experiences and questions. Two things the gospel places in front of us as if to say, will you think about this? Will you try this way? One, there will be grace for a people who live in Christ. There will be grace to restore and to redeem our families, grace given to heal, and there will be courage to find new ones. In the face of the things we do to each other in our families, the wounds we deal out, we will also find a source of grace if we dig that lets us heal these wounds. Out of that inner well from which comes our ability to love and to have faith, that place where the divine dwells in us, comes this mystery of grace. And if there is a message in this, it is that we should never give up on our children, on our parents. Never close the door. Jesus' mother, after thinking him crazy, stayed with him right to the act of accompanying him to his death. And his brother James, released from the obligation to extract him from his silliness, became one of the first leaders of the church in Jerusalem. Sons and daughters come back from far-off lands, and mothers and fathers run to greet them with robes and rings and the fatted calf. And these families of ours, where we live so close as to really rub each other the wrong way so much, are also the very places where we stand the greatest chance of healing and building. There is grace, never give up. That's the first thing. And the second is, when that fails, God's Spirit does give courage when only a new way will do. When we have to find a new family, which may be the principal message of Ruth's story, she should have had no chance. All of the conventional wisdom of her day said to Ruth, you now go and stay with your people. It's where you belong. You're a Moabite. Your mother-in-law is one of the children of Abraham. It has been for so long the way of the world. Stay with your own people in your own land. Ruth has another idea. She knows that in the face of all the conventions, this woman from Judah, Naomi, is her only family, all she's got left. And so she speaks what is perhaps the most intense and beautiful expressions of human love in all of literature. Where you go, I will go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where I die, you will die, and there I will be buried. We'll be a new family, and there will be life in this, and it will be a blessing. Julia knows this, that there are people heading our way that we don't know. Refugees from little villages in broken places, wanderers looking for home for the Spirit, and they may be coming to us because the word is out there. The people who follow Jesus are a new, open kind of family. Grace happens among them. Life returns among them. Among all of our assets, this is a thing that is known about us. So they're trying something new in a foreign land, saying, for a little while, you will be my family and this will be my home. With Jesus, we say, here is my brother, here is my sister, here is my mother. And from all kinds of places and all sorts of human conditions, people are coming here to congregations like this. Visitors and new members and little children we baptize. And here is the magnificent threat of the gospel, that we might become a people of God, connected by a desire to be filled with God's Spirit, and to live passionately together, the vision of the kingdom. And Jesus looks over this family, scans us here today, maybe like on Friday, tapping his foot and nodding his head and saying, here is my mother, here is my brother, here is my sister. Family of God, may it be so. Amen. And we sing as we go this longing of ours that we will show by touch and word from the Red Hymn Book, 427. Let's sing together. And before we are sent and send one another with sung blessing, Wendy has a message.
Before we go out, I just want to take this opportunity to thank Doug for his coverage of Kristen's sabbatical this past month. Not only have we enjoyed hearing his message from the pulpit, but we have also had the benefit of Carpenter Doug upstairs in Clark Hall. So he isn't really leaving at the end of the day today. We will see him from time to time through the next few months, but I just wanted to let you know that on behalf of our congregation, we're very, very happy that you were able to come out of retirement and join us for this past month.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much. You're very kind. Thank you for the warm hospitality. It's been a blessing. And you see, if you hang around Jesus long enough, eventually you pick up a hammer and start building things. As we go into all that is to come, may we go with a bold and a tender love. And may all of God's blessings, earth and sea and sky and this whole human family, be with us and remain between us now and always. Amen.